Mini episode 788 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini, episode number 788. Your favorite football talkers anywhere in the universe are here with Derek Morris and Kyle Ross to break down NFL Week 14. Last week on my picks, I was 8-7, putting me at 92, 91, and 9 for the year. A rare 3-0 on the big three. I'm catching up to at least the 500 mark there, 15, 21, and 2 for the year. 1-0 on my lock pick, putting me at 3 out of 14 for the year, if you need them. And Kyle Ross, 1-3 last week, 29-37. So, Kyle, moving right along to this week here. You said last week that Detroit and Tampa Bay weren't for real. I'd like to ask you, Kyle, what's more for real, those teams or Pizzagate?
Nothing is real. And anyone who believes in any of those three things should be killed. Period. Point blank, end of discussion. You mentioned one team that's not even a top 20 team in the NFL, Tampa Bay. The Detroit
wow.
Lions, who according to you passed some eye tests. Apparently you have Stevie Wonder watching them for the first three quarters of the game because they have been trailing going into the fourth quarter in every game but one
Motown,
last week.
Kyle Ross. He was Motown.
There you go. So it must be. So you got Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles working overtime. Congratulations. And then Pizzagate, you know, I'd like to formally announce that Michael Flynn Jr., your boy, has not responded to my question on Twitter when I said, well, how many children have you slept with in the back of that pizza parlor? So it's very obvious to me that Michael Flynn Jr.,
ooh,
I would like to formally announce on the FDH Lounge, is a pederast.
send hate mail to Kyle Ross, ladies and gentlemen.
Why would you send hate mail?
I am disassociating myself and the FDH Lounge brand from that statement, but okay.
Why would you just send, I'm a true American.
My goodness.
Not like that piece of shit.
Nothing like inviting the wrath of the son of our next NSA director here. I'm afraid that even my boy Rand Paul, a big privacy advocate, won't be able to save you, Kyle, if you keep running your mouth like that.
Yeah, I tweeted to him directly, and he didn't respond. The man obviously likes children.
Well, let's just say he likes them in an advocate kind of a way. At least that's my stance on the matter anyways.
Oh, so he advocates for them coming over. So he advocates them coming to the back of the pizza shop, is what you say. I mean, what am I saying different than Pizzagate? What's different than what I'm doing than Pizzagate? Riddle me that.
Well, aren't you swapping out the real villains in this matter for other people? Well, what about John Podesta's
part of all
this?
Well, there are no villains. Anyone who believes in Pizzagate should seriously be killed. I'm dead serious. I want to make that clear. They should be killed.
Well,
and their families should be killed.
What about WikiLeaks?
And they... Then good. There's no evidence of that. Like, where people drew that conclusion is insane. And anyone who does, like, seriously, I want to make a comment right now. I'll throw the show off the road. I hope Alex Jones fucking dies by the end of this podcast.
Well, that's a pretty short time frame. We have 45 minutes, which is increasingly looking unlikely for getting all 16 games in there. But we shall see.
Not soon enough, in my opinion. I hope he's done by the Thursday night talk.
Keep taking your vitamins, Alex. I'm sure you'll outlive us all. But anyways, we go to the Thursday night game first. We generally block over these.
You piece of shit.
We get these games up right around showtime, so we'll gloss over it. The 9-3 Chiefs at the 10-2 Raiders, a rare five-star matchup on Thursday night, 8:25 Eastern time from Arrowhead Stadium.
Disagree.
In Kansas City. I'm sorry, that would be the Raiders at the Chiefs, rather, so. On NBC and the NFL Network, Michaels, Collinsworth, and Cox on the call. This is a game where Kansas City is laying the standard boring 3 points at home here. Looking at a couple of numbers here, as always, getting some great statistical help here from USA Today Sports Weekly, a shout-out to them. The Raiders 5-0 on the road this season, and again, that kind of seems like it's due to start going the other way. And the Chiefs really kind of handled them earlier in the season. I don't necessarily think that it indicates that they're that much better than them, but they've already matched up with them successfully once. Not many teams right now can take down the Raiders, but the Chiefs have shown they're one of them. I'll take Kansas City laying the 3.
I don't even want to give analysis on this game out of protest. I cannot say enough how overrated both of these teams are. You have a Kansas City Chiefs team who last week got a defensive touchdown, a special teams touchdown, and a returned two-point conversion, which, oh, by the way, won the game. 2 weeks ago at Denver, another game they really had no business winning either. And then Oakland, I mean, they've just been pulling them out of their arse on a weekly basis. Last week, at least the second half, probably the best they've looked all year besides the Denver game on Sunday night. They were down 24-9 to the Bills at home, looked pretty lifeless before just things switched. So really the only probable way for this game to end is Kansas City to have a one-score lead in the snow. I guess I heard the weather forecasts are pretty bad for Kansas City tonight. And then improbably the weather will raise 70 degrees on the Raiders' final drive, and they will score the winning touchdown. That's what I think is going to happen.
That's probably how it'll play out. You never know.
I cannot wait till the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the dog piss out of one of these teams in the playoffs.
I'd be surprised if that happened, but we'll have to put a pin in that particular suggestion there. Up next, a battle of, I can't even believe I'm saying this because of one of the two teams involved, two potential playoff teams, the 8-4 Broncos at the 6-6 Titans. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Nissan Stadium in Nashville on CBS. Past lounge guest Ian Eagle teaming up with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn. On the call in this game, Tennessee at the outset laying 1.5. That is down now to 1. And, again, what I'm about to say, broadly speaking, could be a little bit risky because when you look at the offense here, the way that Mariota has come on, complementing that with the running game, captained by DeMarco Murray, I still say the better team involved here is the road team, the road dogs, the Broncos. I'm going to go with the better team getting a point in this one. That's Denver. They got to win to keep some semblance of pace in the AFC West, even as they don't seem to be in a lot of danger, I would think, of missing a playoff spot. You may disagree, Kyle.
Well, if you look at the Broncos' last three games, I can see, you know, and this is a team that I predicted to regress and miss the playoffs for the year. And I think when I said that, I said, look at that end of season schedule. It's pretty tough. They do have two of these three games at home to end the year, New England and Oakland, but those are the two best record teams in the AFC, and then they have to also go at Kansas City. There's a chance, you know, given how Oakland handled them that first week, Denver could lose out after this game. Normally you'd think I'd be on the Titans here, but I just don't agree with the spread. They should be getting more points here. They are off a bye, which is interesting. That needs to be factored in. I'm still hoping the Titans win the division. I think they can. They do close with Jacksonville and Houston. But these next two games, Denver and KC, could be pretty hard. So I'm not playing this game at all. I think it's kind of shocking that Tennessee is not getting like a field goal, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the schedule doesn't get any easier for Denver the rest of the way. You're right about that. Up next, it's the warm weather disappointment bowl. It's the 5-7 Chargers at the 4-8 Panthers. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Obama Bailed Out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. On the call, past lounge guest Sam Rosen, along with Brady Quinn and past lounge guest Jennifer Hale. This is a game where Carolina is laying a point down from 1.5 initially. And a tough one to get a handle on with these teams here. One of the tougher ones for me to get my arms around this week. But I'm going to default to, again, something that you have been talking about in a macro sense, if not necessarily with the Chargers. But the Chargers, when they've been traveling away from home here, games in the Eastern time zone, this is a 1 o'clock kickoff here. I fully expect that to go against them yet again. So in this spot, I'm going to be on Carolina coming off of an arse kicking as they were. I'll take them laying the 1.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to play this game. Both these teams, gross underachievers, kind of like you alluded to, San Diego. My God. Anyone who watched that game last week, I think there was a play in there that was just so emblematic of the Chargers season. They get a big stop, ball back. They were up a touchdown at the time. A insane interception for Tampa Bay that was run back for a touchdown inside the 10-yard line. From there, You know, the usual fourth quarter Chargers collapse. At this point, I'm writing them off. I thought if they'd won that game, they had a chance for a late season surge to get into the playoffs. But that'll look next year for Philip Rivers and company. Hopefully the injury luck will turn around for them. And I'm assuming Mike McCoy will not be in charge on the sideline either. Carolina absolutely bludgeoned last week against Seattle. Nice to see Derek Anderson, by the way, you know, albeit for just one play, reminding us all why he's a career backup. So I'm just laying off this game. When you have two teams underachieving this much, I don't know. I just don't. The season is over for both of them. It's not like you can't make a case and say, this team's still playing for playoffs. Both these teams are done. You said before that last game, Denver, Tennessee, both these teams are in playoff contention. That's a surprise. Well, neither of these teams are going to be in the playoffs, and they know it. It's over.
Well, the same thing applies 100% to the Battle of Ohio. It's the 4-7-1 Bengals at the 0-12 Brownies. 1 o'clock Eastern time from I Still Call It Cleveland Browns Stadium on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, and Steve Berline have been sentenced to do the call on this game here. And Cincinnati laying 6 points up from 4 initially. And a great tip that I saw on this game that I find persuasive, and I can't quite remember if I read this from handicapper Mark Lawrence or former world-class wrestling announcer Mark Lawrence. It was one of those two. But they indicated that winless teams coming off a bye have a tendency to do very well, break through. This is one of the only ones, if you're still circling the games left on the schedule here for what's winnable to avoid 0-16, this is not necessarily the top of the list, but it's close to the top of a very shrinking list at this point in time here. I think the Brownies could win outright, such as my level of disrespect
Whoa.
To the Bengals right now. I don't expect it. I think Cincinnati's going to win the game. But the Brownies getting 6, the NFL being a thing where weird things happen, it's the Illuminati, yo. That kind of stuff tends to go down all the time. Weird things happen. I don't see the Browns going 0-16. Just because so few teams ever do. So I'm on the Browns in this spot.
And it's Cincinnati, too, you know. Marvin Lewis, Hugh Jackson,
yeah.
Friends, Marvin Lewis, nothing to play for. You know, I'd hate to accuse anyone. I don't know. But, he doesn't have to, win the game by any kind of margin. Fuck it. I wasn't going to give this out as a recommendation, but I will. Cleveland's off 6 straight ATS losses, by the way, before the bye. They got to cover one, right? God, I hope it's not my San Diego Chargers that they beat on Christmas Eve, but it could be. I do think they'll win one of these next two home games. The only problem, though, we talked about this last week, San Francisco's still sitting out there with only one win. So if the Browns win a game, all of a sudden it's kind of, trepidatious time.
This whole thing of, they're due. You're sounding like one time me and my best friend in the casino when we had our cockamamie theory about red, black on roulette. Oh, it's gone black 10 times in a row, and we've lost several times already. Let's shove out the remaining balance, right?
Hey, what are you talking about?
Go black one more time.
Wait, what are you talking about?
That's what you sound like with saying that the Browns are due. It's in all these losses here, It's like you're sounding like a couple of numb nuts in a casino.
They are no team plays as poorly as 0-12. Impossible. There's never been an NFL team in history that has played to a zero win expectancy. And the Cleveland Browns don't. Their win expectancy isn't high, but there's certainly games they probably should have won. Hell,
right.
Two weeks ago against the Giants, they outgamed them. The Giants. And that game really swung on a defensive score.
Well, that's true. That's a very good point. We go from earlier, that San Diego-Carolina game, the warm-weather disappointment bowl, to just the warm-weather mediocrity bowl, I guess you would say, in this one. Look at the records, and if you add them together, it's the 5-6-1 Cardinals at the 7-5 Dolphins, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida, on Fox, Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, and the yummy Holly Sanders on the call here. And this is a game where Miami is laying a point down from 2.5 initially, so kind of a short favorite at home. I know that that's something that you have always kind of said to keep an eye out on. I know that you're always suspicious a lot of times whenever a team is a short favorite at home. But what I said previously about San Diego having to come out east, I think it holds true even more so for Arizona. You look at those games, Buffalo, Carolina, Atlanta. This team always seems to lay an egg whenever they're having to play these 1 o'clock games here. The internal clocks don't quite seem to be working. I didn't watch any of Hard Knocks this year, but I'm guessing they didn't spend any time on readjusting the body clocks for those 1 o'clock Eastern time games. And that will probably come back to bite Arizona. I think they will be pretty much bounced altogether from playoff talk after this week. I'll take the Fish weighing the point at home with a chance to stay in the wild card race.
Yeah, well, you'll probably like this even more. The line has actually gone to Arizona -2.
-2 now.
This afternoon. Yeah, Arizona's, okay. No, Arizona's -2. Cardinals. I'm on the Cardinals despite the fact that I hate the line move. I made them a 3-point favorite, and you know, this line opened at them +3. It's very, very rare that I'd be that off from the odds makers, but I just don't have a lot of regard for Miami at all. You know, we referenced bubbles bursting, teams being exposed throughout the year. You know, I think that happened to Miami last week. They were completely outclassed in Baltimore. Arizona was a winner for me last week against Washington. And I think I made mention on last week's show that they've got kind of a chance to stay relevant here with a stretch of games against what I feel are pretenders, Washington, Miami, and then next week, New Orleans. I got the cards here. I'll take them to cover, even though I hate the line move, and I'm probably going to regret it. But I'll take the Arizona here, who's just the better team.
Well, as far as what happened with Miami last week, if we were doing a 90s themed show, I guess we would say that the Dolphins were outshined in Baltimore there. But, yeah, they certainly were.
Very good, yeah.
And thank you. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more of that this week, to be quite honest with you. Up next, it's the 3-9 Bears at the 8-4 Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Ford Field on CBS. Spiro Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the call. Detroit is, and that's, by the way, an interesting one here in terms of TV. So this got flexed away from CBS. This is a game that's from Fox, I should say. So I don't know if Fox didn't want any part of this one or whatever the case may be, but they're playing on the other network than what they would usually be on. Detroit laying 7.5 in this one here. And, again, the Bears, even for being a bad team, still at times kind of hard to wrap your arms around. They've gone against my expectations a number of times this year. Like, for example, I thought Philly was going to bounce back to earth quicker than they did, and Philly stayed on that fluke hot run and destroyed the Bears. I thought that the Bears were going to go down to the 49ers. They didn't have any part of that. So for a 3-9 team, they've been a lot less predictable than I thought they were going to be. I like them to get underneath the number in this one here, if only because I think we're still in this phase where Matt Barkley, I don't know if it's that there's not enough tape on him out there yet, but he's sort of in this early kind of honeymoon saga. He's playing for a shot on the roster next year, if not significant playing time, with Jay Cutler not coming back in all likelihood. So I don't necessarily like them to win, but I think they can get under the 7.5. And I know with your level of regard for the Lions, you'd probably be hard-pressed to disagree with me.
Yeah, I'm not recommending it just because, you know, the Bears, they still qualify as a bad team. And they're off a big win last week against San Francisco. Held the Niners to 6 passing yards, my God. With Detroit, last week was absolutely 110% Detroit's best game of the year. First time they've won by more than 7 points all year. Of course, they did it with a little bit of smoke and mirrors. They were +3 in turnovers. That always helps. You know, I was shocked that they beat the Saints last week. Absolutely shocked. We should point out that Chicago, believe it or not, won the first meeting between these.
Right. They can beat them.
But, you know, if you put a gun to my head, which, you know, I know under the Trump administration they'll do, because, you know, I mean, heaven knows we have to expand, you know, all guns rights. So, you know, that's going to be legal, you know, whatever. I would pick the Bears, but they are not a recommendation.
I'm reading enough memes these days, Kyle, to indicate that you may have a helicopter ride in your future in the next 4 years there, Pinochet style. But regardless of that, I think that is a game that you might want to stay away from if you didn't have to make a pick on every game. I have been foolhardy enough to attempt that over the course of time. And, again, it's going to be hard for me to reach 52.4% for the season at this point. I'm a game above 500 for the year. I made it last year. It was a miracle. I think I got to go close to 60% the rest of the way. So hashtag ain't happening. Up next, it's the 6-6 Vikings at the 2-10 Jaguars. Ouch. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Everbank Field in Jacksonville on Fox. 5-time lounge guest Kenny Albert, Daryl Moose Johnston, and the lovely Tamara Oakman on the call. This is a game where Minnesota is laying 3.5. Up from 3 initially, and
This one may surprise you a little bit here because I have very publicly sort of taken a crap on the Jags the better part of the year here since they let me down. Of the two hipster wild card picks that I made this year, one has made me look like a genius. That would be the Raiders. One has made me look like a doofus, and that would be the Jaguars. But looking at the way that they're playing, though, again, they've still, for a bad team, really just been kind of hanging in there. You look at the outcomes of the games here, and by and large, they really haven't been getting their doors blown off. The Vikings are a team that is just really circling the drain very hard at this point. I'm taking Jacksonville in a game that I think could put the nail in the coffin for the Vikings. I sense a letdown for the Vikings here. And, you know, coming off of that loss that they suffered last week. And, yeah, I am on the Jaguars in this one with a 3.5.
I like it. Good for you. Good for you. Jacksonville, to your point, their last five games, they've lost by 5 to Kansas City, outgained them, but they were -4 in turnovers. They lost to Houston by 3, outgained them, were -2 in turnovers. Detroit, total yardage was pretty much identical. That was a 7-point game. And if you remember, the Lions actually kicked a late field goal, I believe, on the final play to get the cover there. Buffalo, that was a back-and-forth game where total yardage was, again, relatively even, lost by 7. And then last week, okay, they lose by 10 to Denver, but they held the Broncos to 206 total yards, but they were -3 in turnovers. I'll tell you what, whoever's coaching Jacksonville next year, because it ain't going to be Gus Bradley, he's walking into a pretty decent situation. Well, the Jags are going to be on my most I was not that high on them this year. Of course, I wasn't high on the Raiders either, so it's kind of an opposite situation. Jacksonville's absolutely going to be on my most improved list for next year. Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. I got to make up games, man. I'll take them here. I'll recommend them.
All right, there you go. The third pick for you, Kyle. Up next, an NFC South battle. It's the 5-7 Saints at the so much vastly improved 7-5 Buccaneers. So impressed with them. 4:25 Eastern Time, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa on Fox. Tom Brennan and Charles Davis, Chris Field and Peter Schrager, a veritable cast of thousands on the call for this game here. Tampa Bay laying 2.5 at home, and if anything, at this point, I'm just puzzled that it's not more. Maybe it looks too easy, but I'm on the Bucs right now. They can do no wrong lately, Kyle.
What? They've pulled, like, 3 straight games out of their arse. By the way, I'm really kind of upset about this because if you remember last year, like, I picked Tampa Bay to be this huge breakout team. Where the hell were these, you know, these miracle wins last year when I needed them? I'll say this. I don't think they're very good, but they got a great shot at the playoffs. You know, it's 7-5, and with New Orleans coming to town here, they're favored. You're 8-5. You're in a pretty good spot, but I don't know. I think both of these teams have surprised me getting to their current records. And, you know, the Saints off a really disappointing loss. I would anticipate them. We don't think of the Saints as a good road team, but they haven't lost in Tampa Bay since 2011, believe it or not.
Well, I like my pick all the more. I think they're even due for that to continue.
Oh, now you're going
the
just
Saints
due. Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, I think so, yeah. Okay. Now I'm doing it, so it's
that's
right.
That's a
fucking
roulette table for you, pal.
Hey, it's not red, black in the casino when I'm doing it, pal. That's the rule of thumb. Up next, it's the 6-5-1 Redskins at the 5-7 Eagles. 1:00 Eastern Time from the Link in Philadelphia on Fox. Kevin Burkhart, John Lynch, and the yummy Pam Oliver on the call here. This is a game where Washington, I believe it is still a pick. It's been a pick the better part of the week here, which, again,
they've been gone up.
Really
it's gone up recently.
Yeah,
I'm seeing a -2 now.
I assume Washington. The Washington's got
Washington
to okay, I was going to say, it has to be them if there's a favorite in this game here. Again, I know the unholy deference that we have to play. OMG, home field's worth 3 points, but look at the way the Eagles have been playing recently. And again, not that the Redskins the last couple of weeks have been lighting up America, but the Eagles are just inventing new ways to suck on a regular basis here. So in a game that scares me because it almost looks too easy, I'm on the Redskins to stay alive in the playoff race here and cover the 2.
Yeah, I'm on the Eagles. after they got embarrassed last week in Cincinnati. They return home where they generally played a lot better this year. They did beat Atlanta last month at home. That wasn't too long ago. And they got kind of outclassed by Green Bay in a Monday night game, but whatever. That was one the Packers had to have. I'll say this when you handicap this game. These teams met back in October in the nation's capital, a place which is set to have a lot of problems. And Philadelphia was actually a 3-point favorite at Washington. Now, they did lose the game outright, so the odds makers need to adjust. But I think they've over-adjusted right now. You know, I liked the Eagles as a pick 'em, and I certainly like them getting two. Give me Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, all right. So you're on them. Another dog pick for you. Up next, a battle of two teams where you could see this one going 75 minutes, quite frankly, because the thought of either one of these teams notching a W right now seems completely foreign. It's the 3-9 Jets at the 1-11 49ers. 4:05 Eastern Time, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara on CBS. Greg Dumbel, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. This is a game where San Francisco laying 2.5 at home, up from 1 initially. And, again, two just absolute shite teams at this point in time here. Nice to see Mr. Un-America get what he had coming to him last week, Colin Kaepernick. But I'm looking for it to happen probably a week behind schedule here. The Jets, I think, just appear to be in more trouble right now because they still have the revolving door quarterback. The 49ers, for whatever it's worth, are sticking with their guy at least through the end of the season here. So I will go with the 49ers to break through, get that second win, and thereby help my Cleveland Browns by helping them clinch the number one draft pick in the 2017 NFL selections.
Can you clarify something for me?
Yes.
Did great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa Morris go on his podcast, always make sure to that we should all, you know, swear allegiance to the king and queen of England? I can't remember about that.
What happened then is, first of all, they were still over in Europe before 1900, so I have no family that was here. But as far as swearing allegiance to the crown, you always love to throw bygone concepts like the Constitution back at me, Kyle Ross.
You know, there's one thing I'll say about the Constitution. Positive. Nice font. You know, real nice font there. I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
I don't know if
that's Comic
Sans. I'll tell you, that ain't Comic Sans, I'll tell you that much. These two teams put up two of the most putrid performances I have ever seen in NFL history last week. The San Francisco 49ers had 6 passing yards in the year 2016. That can't happen. The New York Jets, who I am embarrassed to say I had, and by the way, I was feeling great going into the game. The late money, which is usually indicative of sharp money, was all on the Jets. They were actually bet for the role of favorites. And then I believe someone forgot to tell the team that they were scheduled for the game because that was so awful. I mean, Todd Bowles, a year removed from 10-6, where he, you know, seemed to be a real darling of the league, he might get, I mean, that's the kind of performance that can get you fired. I mean, you can't.
Right.
A team that just no shows. I'm not playing this game. I mean, I wouldn't play this game with your money. Maybe Trump's money.
Such
but,
as it
know.
Is.
Yeah, I'd play the
exactly.
game with Trump's money, and you know, that your boy Scott Pruitt too. You know, that's another guy.
It's another
like,
one.
Tornado get
well,
him.
Of the 6 games we have remaining, up next is the 4:25 Eastern Time. I believe they call it the game of the week. Very pompously on Fox because they got their A-team of Buck, Aikman, and Andrews on it. It's the 8-3-1 Seahawks at the 6-6 Packers. And this is a game where Seattle is laying 2.5 here on the road to the Packers. And this is a game where the Seahawks, if you look at the home-road splits this year, it's really been kind of a pronounced difference. I mean, they're always much better at home. This just in, they're pretty good with the 12th man there. But seems to be a little bit more pronounced than usual. The Pack has been kind of putting it back together the last couple of weeks. Some of that has obviously had to do with the chode teams that have been in their path. But looking at it at this point in time here, I'm going to stay on the Packers to stay alive in the NFC playoff chase here, and I'll take them to cover getting the 2.5.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably going to be Green Bay or your Tampa Bay Buccaneers that get this last wild card. I only think it's going to take 9 wins, to be honest with you, to get that last wild card spot in the NFC. I really cannot
get a grasp around who's going to get it. If Green Bay wins here, I'll definitely favor them. You've got to be cautious about overvaluing Seattle after what they did last Sunday night when they just stuck it to Carolina. They also don't have Earl Thomas. Let's talk about that. That's a big deal. That's big time moving forward.
That is huge.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I still feel Seattle's going to get the number two seed in the NFC behind Dallas, of course. But, you know, come playoff time, Earl Thomas's absence will loom large. I'm staying off this game because, believe it or not, my numbers do support Seattle being favored in this spot. But, you know, the Thomas injury and the fact that they can't possibly play as well as they did last week have me off them. I'm not – Green Bay, still not sold on them, though. They're not that good.
No, they're not. They're not. They may limp into the playoffs, but no, they're not. I picked them to win the NFC and the Super Bowl, and no, they're not nearly the team I thought they were. Another team that isn't nearly what people thought they were with the way they started out the season here, the 7-5 Falcons at the 4-8 Rams, 4:25 Eastern time from the L.A. Coliseum on Fox. Dick Stockton, David Deal, Christina Pink on the call. Atlanta is laying 6 in this one, up from 5. Initially, this game feels like one that the Falcons are just assuming are going to be, it's going to be a bounce back game, a get well game, but, you know, sneaky penis punching Jeff Fisher, you know, that's how he gets his mediocre win tally every year here, 4-8. They got to get to that range of mediocrity that they're always in here, 6 wins, 7 wins, 8 wins, if it's a real super Jeff Fisher kind of a year. In other words, again, they always sort of defy expectations. You figure this is going to be a game where the Falcons are just going to come in and thump them. But particularly with that defense, the capacity for getting turnovers on the Falcons here, I'll take the Rams to get underneath the 6. And enough of a shocker, they could win it outright. Don't think they will, but I think they can cover.
Rams only have 1 win in the last 7 games. It was a 9-6 game against the Jets.
Yep.
God, I don't remember that game, but could you imagine watching that game? 5 field goals between the Rams and the Jets. Jesus Christ.
Take years off your life.
Imagine thinking that Jeff Fisher is a good coach and imagine supporting him getting this extension.
I have a friend who does.
Can you believe that? Yeah, you have a friend that does. That's for sure. I mean, how nauseating when I saw that he got that extension. I don't know. What are the LA Rams thinking, man? If they want to stay mediocre forever, get on with your bad self. But, I don't know. The LA Rams, I kind of actually, like, I don't know what it is, but, like, it went from this, I don't understand why this guy's employed, to, like, I just hate Jeff Fisher at this point. I don't want to pick the Rams anymore. Even though I think you're right, they're probably going to stick under the 6. The Falcons, God, I hope they can't do it 2 years in a row, can they? Gag City.
As far as the extension to Jeff Fisher, that renders the Los Angeles general manager's penile surgery as the second most embarrassing extension of his lifetime. And that really takes something, I think, under the circumstances.
That's very good.
So,
thank you.
Very good. So, we moved to the Monday night game. It's the 7-5 Ravens at the 10-2 Patriots. A rematch of a couple of AFC Championship games from earlier this decade. 8:30 Eastern time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on ESPN. Sean McDonough, John Gruden, Lisa Salters on the call. New England is laying 7 in this one, down from 8 initially. And this is one where, again, I look at this and I'm on Baltimore because I think they can cover it. I'm a bit confused as to the spot here. This was almost a why ask why in terms of I almost played the Patriots. For anybody that's like watched them the last couple of weeks, I understand the Patriots are like a big public team. I get that. I love
yes,
I know the
are.
Mouth breathers just reflectively bet them. But I don't get why the spread is as inflated as it is. And usually when I have that feeling, it's a problematic feeling, but I'm going to go with it this time. I'm on the Ravens to cover.
I'm not playing this one. Maybe you're misreading that. I checked up. This spread was actually going to be 10 on the look-ahead line, believe it or not.
Wow.
And what's very odd here is New England is not getting 50% of the handle, which
okay.
is very rare. It's very rare.
Miscalculation.
So this is a rare. The public is actually going against the Patriots in this game, which normally would make it a great buy low spot on them. And I kind of still want to because I don't really have a ton of respect for the Ravens. They're all defense, no offense. But I'm staying away. I don't want to lay this number of points with a team that, you know, missing Gronk, You can't put too much stock into them blowing out the Rams last week. You know, that impotent organization, or maybe not impotent, according to the information you've just passed along.
Yeah, maybe not. Nice tie in there, by the way. All right, going to my big three picks, which have been heated up in recent weeks here. We start with the 7-5 Steelers at the 6-6 Bills, 1 o'clock Eastern time from New Era, but same old crap field in Orchard Park, New York on CBS. Somehow or another, the A-team of Nance, Sims, and Wolfson is on the call here. I don't quite understand that one, but whatever. Pittsburgh
Steelers
is laying 2 points in this game. Yeah. And Pittsburgh laying 2 here. And, again, this is one where you look at the line, and I know you said off air you felt like this was like the most Rick Morris pick in the history of Rick Morris picks, you know, road favorite Ricky. But, again, to me, and as I said previously, I don't think the Bills really passed the eye test. The Steelers have kind of cranked it up, got it going with a late season push here. I think the Bills are a fraud, quite frankly. I don't think they're going to hang. I'll take the Steelers, much as I loathe them personally, to win here. I think they could roll.
The Bills win this game, look out. I think they can make the playoffs because their last three games are Cleveland home, Miami home, at the Jets. Those should all be wins. They'll be favored in all three of those games. I did pick the Bills to make the playoffs before the year, and I'm gonna support them here. I think that Pittsburgh, they've won 3 in a row, but it was Cleveland. It was the Colts without Andrew Luck. The Giants, that's a nice win, obviously, but they were at home. Their third road game in 4 weeks? I don't know. The Steelers sometimes have a habit of dumping road games. So I think that this might be the Steelers' last loss of the year, but it will be a loss. I'm gonna take the Bills as a recommendation.
Ooh, going against me here. All right. So the Bills are a recommendation. Up next, it is a game where a Sunday night game here, because of course it is. I believe it was one of many executive orders from the Obama administration that these two teams always played a Sunday night game for some reason on NBC. It's the 11-1 Cowboys at the 8-3 Giants, 8:30 Eastern time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call here. Dallas is laying 3 points, and again, it's a game where the Giants are coming off of that aforementioned spanking at the hands of the Steelers last week in the Rooney Mara Bowl as, again, a victim of the way that the Steelers have kind of turned it up at this point in the season here. And again, this is sort of the red-black theory here. I've gone against Dallas a couple of times recently figuring that they were due, but this is one where, again, looking back here, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, wouldn't that be something? Because you look at the opener of the season here in another one of these federally mandated Sunday night games on NBC between these very two self-same teams, and the Giants winning that game. I look for more of the same. The Giants are a team that matches up pretty well with them at this point in time here. They need this one to hang in. This just in, the division race ain't over yet, ladies and gentlemen. If the Giants win, and I think they will, but at the very least, they're going to cover the 3. That's my second pick.
That's odd. I would actually take the Cowboys here, but I'm not going to play my own favorite. I think big revenge game. I don't think the line is quite high enough. The Giants, who I picked to make the playoffs, and I do think they'll get there as the top wild card, they're kind of a fraudulent team, too. I don't even have them in my top half. They're like the Raiders and the Lions. They've benefited from pulling out a lot of close games, and they're not as good as their record. They have covered 4 in a row against Dallas, which is interesting. Dallas, they haven't covered the last 2 weeks, but they were backdoored both times. They played well. Dallas, very good team. Dallas and New England are on a tier by themselves, in my opinion.
See, to me, that tier goes about 6 deep or so, but then I think the next tier goes 7 to about 25, and that's a thing where I think when you're putting teams in there, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I don't think anybody's worthy of that. I think it's just a thing where, like, you have to put somebody in there. But this is a year where so many teams just aren't as good as their records. And I will agree with you, generally speaking, on that. You and I may not agree on who those teams are. But it's a thing where when you're going to fill out your power rankings, because, again, I'm doing the same thing you are every week, and you can keep checking them out. Same place you find the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, thefdhlounge.blogspot.com. It is a tough kind of slog week after week, and you squint at it and you go, that team doesn't really deserve to be there. But then you look at the teams around them, and they don't deserve to be above them, and it's just one of those weird kind of deals. The game that is my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 14 It is the Indianapolis Colts at home. They've got the Houston Texans in a battle to determine first place or potentially first place at this point in the AFC South, 1 o'clock Eastern time. Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call, and Indianapolis laying 6 down from 6.5 initially. And I'm going with something that's worked for me the last couple of weeks because I think I'm only, 3-11 at this point, but I started off 0-10. So I'm bouncing back a little bit here at this point, and I'm going with whatever is my weakest handle on a game for the week, the one that I think could go either way as far as the line goes the most. And this is one that I agonized over because, again, I don't have a ton of respect for the Colts, but I don't have any respect right now for the Texans just because of how much they are undermined by that offense, by their quarterback play. I said last week that I was pretty confident of the Packers to cover in that game because I had so little respect for Houston, and they did a little more than I thought they were going to do under the circumstances. 6 points is a lot for a team that, when I look at Indianapolis laying those points. But they're at home. Andrew Luck has kind of got it going again here at this point during the season. T.Y. Hilton very quietly could end up the year with maybe his best season to date. I'm on the Colts in this one. I agonize about them laying that many points, even against a team I don't really respect much like the Texans. But because I could go either way on this game so much, that's why it's my lock of the week. The methodology's working for me, Kyle.
You know, I wanted to say this line's probably inflated, but my power rankings say 6 is probably the right number. I don't know. I don't like both these games. So somebody's got to win out. You talk about a game this probably is the game that I have the worst handle on too. I'm not playing it. To your earlier point though, before we start talking about this game, this really does feel like one of those years where some team's just going to get hot before the tournament and win it. You know what I'm saying?
Could
like
be.
Before the playoffs, somebody will get hot. Like those Giants years and just kind of come out of nowhere because, it's just a bizarre year. Reminds me, probably the most bizarre season we've seen since that infamous 99 year where Kurt Warner came out of nowhere and Jacksonville was the top team in the AFC in the regular season. Go back and check that one out.
Very possibly. Possibly. Pete Prisco is saying that team could be the Lions, interestingly enough, if they keep going. So,
Pete Prisco is a tool. Okay?
No,
I'm not just saying that because the Lions. Pete Prisco is shitty, okay? who else can I just frickin' roast? By the way, I'd like to take back a comment I made earlier in the show, Rick Morris, that maybe I was a little bit out of line.
Okay.
I actually don't hope Alex Jones dies. I have too much respect for Gert.
Well, Alex has hopefully lived to the end of this show. We shall see. But my free picture this week.
Let's check about that. Has he? Let's Google that real quick. I'll Google it. You go through the end of the show.
I hope he's saying Alex Jones is still alive is not fake news. Ironically enough, Pittsburgh, the Giants, and my lock pick of Indianapolis, my picks for the week. Yours, Kyle, Cleveland, Buffalo, Arizona, Jacksonville, and Philadelphia. So we shall see how these shake out. Thank you for another great one, Kyle. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to week 14 of our plays.
He's alive.
The FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.